folks, here she is. Time for the US report. Amelia Adams from Channel 9, senior US correspondent, joins us live from LA right now. She's on the phone. Good morning to you, Amelia Adams. Thanks for your time. Welcome aboard again.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. Good to be talking to you, Luke.
Well, there's a lot I want to talk to you about, and the possibility of you and your family coming back to Australia for Christmas. Is it going to happen? We'll talk about that and our borders in just a little while. But the big talking point out of the United States this week is Alec Baldwin pointing a gun at a camera and the gun going off. And one person is dead, a cinematographer is dead, a director is wounded, and nobody can understand how this could possibly have happened. Amelia, what's the latest from the United States and what are people saying?
It is so wild, isn't it? And so tragic. I think the bottom line that's emerged in all this is that it never should have happened. That sounds obvious, but I have listened to so many industry experts, people who worked as armourers, okay? So the people who prepare the guns on film sets for years, vintage weapon experts, firearm specialists, just saying there should never be live ammunition on a film set because it should never be used. And that's the bottom line. That's what police here, investigators in Santa Fe, are trying to get to the bottom of. They found a box of guns. They found a box of live ammo on the set of Rust near where this accident happened. We know now a little bit more about sort of the timeline and the detail. Alec Baldwin was actually rehearsing a scene. He was showing the director, you know, this is how I'm going to draw my gun from the holster, pointing towards the camera where the cinematographer Helena Hutchins was standing to shoot. And that's how she was hit and killed. So, you know, the questions really are surrounding the armourer, who was, by all reports, very inexperienced.
Very young.
Prepared the gun. Very young, 24, a rookie, had been on podcast recently in her own words saying she wasn't sure she was ready for this sort of job, which is very concerning to hear. The assistant director was the second person to handle that gun because he, David Hall, handed it to Baldwin and said, cold gun, which means, you know, it's not a live gun, it's safe. David Hall, we now know, not only had several complaints against him in terms of gun safety in the past, he was actually sacked from another Hollywood film in 2019 because a prop gun went off and it fired and it injured a crew member. He was terminated on the spot. So these are people who don't have great safety records. The investigators are looking at that. We're actually expecting to hear from the Santa Fe District Attorney tomorrow, and that's when we might get a little bit of an indication of the answer to so many of those questions that we're all wanting to know. For example, you know, will there be charges? Could it be a manslaughter charge? Or is this going to head in the direction of civil suits, you'd imagine? I mean, there'll be so many people involved in this production that are going to get sued regardless.
Yeah, that was my next question. Has there been or have there been any charges laid? The answer is no, not yet. My understanding is Alec Baldwin is just unconsolable.
Absolutely inconsolable. And he is not ultimately responsible. This is what we're hearing from everyone in the movie industry. And even, you know, the victim's father, husband, 9-year-old son, best friends have all come out and said, you know, that this was a terrible, tragic accident. The actor is not responsible if he's given a gun that he's told is safe to fire. However, there's a bit of a complexity here because Alec Baldwin is also the executive producer of this film. So the question is, what, if any, level of culpability does he have for the previous safety complaints? What was happening on that set? That morning, crew members had walked off, union members, because they were concerned about pay and conditions and safety. They brought non-union members on. You know, what role did he play in that? What emails or complaints had he seen and potentially ignored? We don't know, but certainly he could be culpable in a civil sense or if there's any negligence charges or lawsuits brought.
I was also reading that Donald Trump's son on Twitter has been mocking Alec Baldwin. Baldwin, of course, has made nearly a career out of having a crack at Donald Trump and impersonating him on Saturday Night Live, etc. But Donald Trump's son has released some rather distasteful tweets.
Yes, Donald Trump Jr. He does love to stir the pot, doesn't he? He actually, I'm not sure if this was a bit of a stunt. It was taken down pretty quickly, but he put out T-shirts on his website which read, guns don't kill people, Alec Baldwin does. Those were pretty quickly taken down, but I mean, pretty tacky. Even if you're not a fan of Alec Baldwin, you know, he's in a terrible situation right now. It's, you know, it's a sort of stunt that is not surprising from Donald Trump Jr. But yeah, I mean, what do you say about it? It's a bit tacky, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And I wonder how the family of that young girl that was killed feel about Donald Trump Jr.'s tweets, you know? Jesus. He put some thought into that, didn't he? Tell me the latest on Gabby Petito's boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. They found his body. What's the very last? It's a very grim story, isn't it?
It's really sad. And, you know, it actually just, I don't think we're ever going to potentially have the answers, Luke, because, you know, even the autopsy has turned up inconclusive for cause of death for Brian Laundrie. He was found a month after he went missing in this Florida reserve, and you know, he was, without going into too much grim detail, basically identified by his teeth. You know, his remains weren't in a good condition, so they don't know how he died. We're all sort of left to assume that something terrible happened between them. We know Gabby was strangled to death, and that he then took himself off and either died in the wilderness or perhaps killed himself. We don't know. We may never know. What investigators are hoping is that he may have left a note or a confession. They found a notebook not far from his backpack, which they're going to try and sort of dry out and restore and read if there were any diary entries or anything like that. The area where he was found was underwater for a time, so you can imagine the state of anything found in that sort of Florida swampy swampland. It's just a really sad story. This, you know, young couple that were adventuring around America, and she's ended up dead, and now he's ended up dead, and we don't know how. His parents are still under siege from the media. They're saying that they're not going to hold a funeral. They're going to cremate him. We still don't know what, if anything, they knew. No charges have been laid. It's just very sad and very messy.
Lifeline 13 11 14 and Beyond Blue 1-300-224-636. But Lifeline is there 24/7. Amelia Adams is with me, Channel 9 senior US correspondent, live from Los Angeles. What's the big story in the United States that you'll be covering on Channel 9 this morning?
Well, I'm just watching the FDA, so our US drug regulator. They're debating this morning whether to approve Pfizer's COVID vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds. So big step for the vaccine program. And both my kids will be in that age group, so interesting for me as a parent as well. You know, they have to decide whether the benefits outweigh the risks, and there have been some cases in that 12-plus age group here of myocarditis, that heart condition in healthy young boys. So, you know, it's not without concern, and there's a fair bit of vaccine hesitancy here from parents. I think the latest poll, it said only about a third of parents with children in that 5 to 11 age group would get their kid vaccinated straight away. There was another third that really wanted to sort of wait and see some longer-term results. So the FDA, the Centers for Disease Control, has to sign off on that. But I would expect in this afternoon's vote that they will approve that for emergency use, which means that 5 to 11-year-old Americans, and there are about 28 million of them, would be eligible for that shot by probably early November.
Well, see, that's interesting, because we here in Australia are now talking about boosters. That is 6 months after your second vaccination. We're encouraged to get a booster, and the TGA is currently looking at approving a Pfizer booster. You are hoping to come back to Australia for Christmas. Now, just out of interest, what hoops have you got to jump through to be able to get on a plane and fly into Sydney Airport before Christmas with your children and your American husband?
It's been such a process, and I'm starting to finally believe it's real and get excited. We actually have to come back to Australia in December to renew our visas. So we were going to do that anyway, and I was quite sort of angsty about it because it would have meant that hotel quarantine. Anyway, as the home quarantine has been dropped, I'm excited. But my husband and I have to be fully vaccinated, which I already was. My husband was not. And looking at the logistics of it, he was going to have to fly on a different airline because I was flying on Qantas with the kids. I come from a Qantas family, and I can't wait to get on that QF. I'm gonna sob. You know, they always play the instrumental version of "I Still Call Australia Home." Always gets me.
Well, can I just say this to you? My daughter Holly flies with Qantas, and there is a big chance she'll be on your flight.
You're kidding! Fantastic. Well, I'll be wandering up and down talking to everyone, so I'm sure I'll connect with her. But my
Holly, you watch.
Okay, I'll have a look for her. And can I tell you, Luke, the flight prices, it was something like $7,000 one way to Sydney for an unvaccinated traveller on United. Then he would have had to do 2 weeks of hotel quarantine at a cost to us of, you know, $3,500.
Yeah.
So that dropping of the home quarantine for vaccinated travellers and, you know, the Qantas requirement, let me tell you, it works because my husband is now almost fully vaccinated and will be flying home as a family.
So your husband decided to get fully vaccinated because of the rigmarole, the palaver that he would have to go through if he wanted to come to Australia well, I don't think he'd be allowed in unvaccinated, to be honest with you. I don't think he would. But so he's not necessarily an anti-vaxxer. You were telling me off air he just hated being told by a government authority what to do.
Yeah, oh, he's not an anti-vaxxer at all, and our kids have always been fully vaccinated, but he is anti-mandate, and
yep.
He doesn't like the idea of adults living in a democracy being told what they should and should not put in their bodies, which I actually understand. But it got to the point for us where life was too difficult. From November the 4th in LA City, they're going to have a very strict mandate, which would mean he couldn't go indoors. He couldn't go to a bar or a restaurant or a...
That's right. No. That's right. And Amelia, just remind him, when he does come to Sydney, is he going to drink bottled water or is he going to drink water out of the tap? Because if he drinks out of the tap, he's got fluoride, whether he likes it or not.
I know, and I think it would have been very hard for him. He would have come to Australia and done 2 weeks in hotel quarantine on his own. But then once he got out, it would be very hard for him. My understanding from my friends in Sydney is that you've got to check in places and, you know, without... Basically, the whole point is that it's very hard to exist in the world we live in without being vaccinated.
It's a new world.
For a reason, right?
It's a new world. Just a postscript on that, and I'll let you go. And you've been so generous with your time again. But last Sunday was International Polio Day. And we have successfully eradicated polio from Australia. I think only Afghanistan, Afghanistan is one country that still has a couple of cases. India may have them. Bangladesh. But we have successfully eradicated polio from Australia because of one reason and one reason alone, vaccination. And when we all lined up, you're a bit young for this, I'm a bit older than you, but when we lined up to have our vaccinations, I went to primary school and we had two kids at our school whose legs were in calipers, so it's not that long ago. We all lined up, we were all compliant, no one needed a letter from their parents, everybody lined up and got their polio vaccination. And I just wonder if we would have been as successful at eradicating polio today, if polio was around today, because back then there was no social media. You were told, here is a disease that attacks children, it can paralyze you, could kill you. And so everybody lined up to get their polio vaccination. No social media. I wonder if it would be the same today, Amelia.
Well, we certainly ask more questions now, don't we? And I guess the difference is COVID, certainly I can only speak from the American point of view, doesn't impact a great deal of children. It is, you know, mostly for children, a disease which if they get it very lightly and don't even know. So that's the difference. I think the other difference might be certainly in California, never before in history here have they mandated a vaccine for children within months of it being approved. I don't know what the turnaround time was for polio, but certainly here, a vaccine has been developed and approved, and then I think the tightest turnaround was 6 years. It's between 6 and 16 years before the school district mandated. So that's the argument that I'm hearing from parents in my school district, that it shouldn't be mandated so soon after being approved. I think that's the writing's on the wall for LA because it's a very strict school district, but there'll be plenty of places around America, as you can imagine, where they won't be mandating this vaccine for children. And that's a funny thing here. You know, it's up to every individual school district and every individual state and mayor and governor to make decisions about whether or not people are forced to get it.
Yeah, the mandating. I totally get that argument and people losing their jobs because they choose not to. One of the big news stories here in Australia, Amelia Adams, Channel 9, live from the United States, the Australian Open is coming up this summer. Novak Djokovic does not want to reveal to anybody his vaccination status. And there was a leaked email from the Tennis Association saying that non-vaccinated players will be able to come into Australia, quarantine for 2 weeks and play. And Daniel Andrews said, no. He said, no spectator will be allowed at the Australian Open that's not vaccinated. Not one worker will be allowed to work at the Australian Open non-vaccinated. And certainly no players will be allowed to play if they're not vaccinated. So that shit fight continues.
Yeah. It's so divisive. And that's the thing. Sadly, it is now really dividing, you know, not only industries and communities, but families.
And friends.
I mean, we've personally had a real struggle over this vaccine issue. And as I said to you, my husband now has never been an anti-vaxxer. Now he's getting vaccinated. But it hasn't been easy to see eye to eye on this stuff. And I think people all around the world are experiencing that.
I know. I've got a friend, my brother-in-law, who has been invited to a dinner party this weekend. And there's 10 of them. And he has children who are young and they're not vaccinated. And he said, do I ask the people throwing this dinner party, who are friends of ours, are there any non-vaccinated people coming to the dinner party? Because if so, I'm not going. You know, it is, it's dividing families, it's dividing friends, it's dividing nations. Amelia Adams, you got to go. Your bells will be ringing. Thank you so much for your time again this morning. We love talking to you.
Oh, could chat for hours. Always lovely to talk, Luke. I'll speak to you next time.
I look forward to it. You take care. She's so generous with the time and she's so busy. Amelia Adams with our US report, Channel 9 senior correspondent. There she is, live from Los Angeles.
The Night Shift. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. The Night Shift.
Good morning, Vincent.
Hey, yeah, mate.
Good, mate. What's up?
Have a quick crack at the quickie, mate.
Crack away. Have a quick crack.
The Zombies by the Cranberries?
No, it's not, Vincent. I'm really, really sorry. Gavin's in Adelaide. Gavin, what do you got?
Brass in Pocket by the Pretenders.
No, it's not, Gavin. I'm sorry, buddy.
Okay, no worries.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye.
Can't sleep? Bored on the job? Get amongst the conversation now on The Night Shift. This is Luke Boner with Jess around Australia on the Triple M Network.